Good morning and welcome to our new attendees for the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference, and welcome back to our Security Professionals Conference attendees. My name is Rodney Peterson, and I'm the Managing Director of the EDUCAUSE Washington office. And on behalf of EDUCAUSE, I'd like to welcome you to what is our final day for security professionals and the first day of the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference. As many of you know, for the past couple of years, we've been co-locating these two events. And it's been both an experiment and really a nice surprise to bring these two communities together, starting with the reception last evening. And this morning, as you know, we'll have some sessions that are overlapping that you can both participate in as well. Some of you may also be aware that we have a third group meeting downstairs, the EDUCAUSE Advanced Core Technology Initiatives, or ACTI, and they participated in our reception last night as well. Just to give you a couple insights into plans for 2014, this is our 11th annual security conference. There will be a 12th annual at a site and date to be determined, but look for more information about that soon. Probably the most immediate way you'll learn about it is through the EDUCAUSE Security Discussion Group, if you're a part of that. If you're not subscribed to that list, either because you're a new attendee, new to the conference, or new to the community, or maybe even an enterprise IT leader, I recommend that you go to the educause.edu/cgslite. where you'll see the various groups that exist, including security, and sign up and be part of almost 3,000 people who share and communicate on that list regularly, and we'll also have other ways that we announce it. Secondly, if you're here for the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference, I want to let you know that there will be an enterprise event next year as well. We will probably not co-locate the events next year for primarily logistical reasons, and we do have a program chair in place that will work with staff and others to try to shape that conference event for next year. So stay tuned for more information about both of those events, and you know, please let myself or EDUCAUSE staff or others know if you have further questions. I would like to thank our sponsor this morning, Kroll, who is located outside in the hallway. If you have a chance to visit with them after this morning's opening keynote address, or they have materials that are left for you in your chairs, so please visit with them and thank them for their sponsorship. We really appreciate the sponsorships that are provided. One more final announcement before I turn it over to our program chair for the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference. Many of you may know that EDUCAUSE and Internet 2, along with our Higher Education Information Security Council, work with partners to hold a annual poster and video contest to raise security awareness. And that poster and video contest is just being wrapped up. Winners have been identified, and some of the videos and posters are being released this week as we speak on our various channels. So again, that's something, if you're interested in taking advantage of those for either summer orientation or training you're going to be doing yet this spring and into the summer and fall, I'll look for an announcement about that soon. And we thank you for your support and encouraging the students to participate and to submit a variety of excellent videos and posters as well. So next, I would like to introduce and turn the program over to Bill Allison, who is the chair of the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference. Bill is the director of Campus Technology Services from the University of California, Berkeley. Please welcome Bill.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to see so many people here and up, ready for an Enterprise and Combined Security Conference. It's been my distinct pleasure to chair the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference for 2013 for EDUCAUSE, and it's been a great, we've had a great time putting this together for you. So I'm welcoming everybody from both the Security Conference and the Enterprise Conference. I think you're going to have a great couple days. We have a really good program put together for you, and we're covering a lot of important IT topics. Also, this is one of my favorite conferences for the networking that we all do because of the size and sort of intimacy of this group. So anyway, I would like to acknowledge the work of the Enterprise IT Leadership Conference Program Committee and ask them to stand at this time. Thank you, guys. It made my job a lot easier than it would have been otherwise. So let me remind you that throughout the day, please fill out the online evaluation form. It's right in the agenda on the website, and you can actually do it when you're right before you leave the room. That feedback is incredibly important. We used it this year. EDUCAUSE uses it to help improve these events. So without further ado, let me introduce the panel of distinguished leaders. I'm going to bring up Peter Murray, who's the CIO at the University of Maryland at Baltimore, and he is going to kick off this general session. And when you put a security conference together with an enterprise conference, what better topic than enterprise risk management? So he has a distinguished panel, and I will turn it over to Peter.
Thank you, Bill. Yes, we do have a panel of experts with us this morning to discuss an emerging and growing program in higher education, and that's enterprise risk management. And this morning, we're going to talk about its implications for enterprise IT. I'd like to welcome you to this session and also welcome the web audience that's viewing this session as well. Every institution has enterprise risks, and ERM is an important process that identifies those risks, assesses those risks, and treats those risks. A person who knows a great deal about ERM is Janice Abraham, who will provide a brief keynote this morning before we get into the panel discussion. Janice is the president and CEO at United Educators. She joined United Educators Insurance as president and CEO in 1998. She's responsible for developing and executing business strategy and operational plans for the risk management and insurance company. During her tenure, United Educators has become known as the premier risk management and liability insurance expert serving educational institutions, offering in-depth expertise on the unique risks and claims facing education. Prior to joining United Educators, Janice served the higher education community as the chief financial officer and treasurer at Whitman College, where she still serves as trustee, in various senior positions at Cornell University, and as a staff associate at NACUBO, the National Association of College and University Business Officers. Please welcome Janice Abraham.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me here today and being part of this group. My assignment to kick off this session is to give all of us a bit of a primer on enterprise risk management, to lay the groundwork so then we can drill down to speak specifically about your role in this emerging trend. And the issue of enterprise risk management really is about the same history as United Educators. It started, United Educators started in the mid-1980s, and there was a crisis in insurance and in risk management. And a lot of commercial insurance companies decided that they didn't like colleges and universities and schools and churches and municipalities to insure. And so they walked away and said, we don't really want to provide you with insurance and risk management support. And so a group of trustees and chancellors and chief financial officers, presidents, all got together and said, well, we can do this. Couldn't be that hard to insure colleges and universities. We'll put some money in and start our own little company. And that's exactly what they did with United Educators. Since then, we have grown to be about 1,200 schools, colleges, and universities. It's a co-op or a mutual kind of organization. And because we are owned by all of these schools and universities, our primary goal is to try to prevent bad things from happening. That's why we exist. So if we prevent bad things from happening, things won't go wrong, you won't get sued, your faculty will be able to teach and research, your students will be able to study and graduate, and life will be perfect. Well, it's not always that way, and things do go wrong. And one of the reasons I personally am so interested in enterprise risk management is because it gives trustees, senior leadership, directors of colleges and universities a better chance, a better opportunity to ferret out, to understand what unexpected events could happen, and better yet, allocate resources better. Let me repeat that, because that's really what ERM is all about. It is a process that helps institutions at a very high level that can permeate into the institution, identify both upside risks and downside risks, and we tend to focus more on the downside risks, but I don't want to neglect the opportunities that ERM can identify, and be prepared for them, and to allocate resources more effectively. So spend your time, your money, your brain power, your energy on things that matter instead of things that somebody just happens to have an interest in at this point, because resources are too scarce to do that. So ERM is a process, most importantly, that began really in corporate America at the end of the last century and took a lot of traction, got a lot of traction with Sarbanes-Oxley when Congress all of a sudden got interested in better risk management at corporations. And so as our trustees who sit on corporate boards also sit on our boards at colleges and universities, they brought this ERM framework and said to a lot of college presidents and chancellors, so what's our ERM strategy? What are we doing about this? And I have this obligation when I sit on a corporate board, says Ms. Trustee, what are we doing at our campus? And the schools and universities were like, well, ERM, what the heck is that? I don't know. We buy insurance, so aren't we okay? Well, the answer, of course, is no. The issues that, although we'll talk later about insurance and the role of insurance in technology and IT issues on campuses, ERM is really about the big risks, the risks that, for the most part, you can't insure, that you're not going to be able to transfer this risk very cleanly to another entity. Rather, these are the risks that could really derail your plan, could put you off accomplishing your strategic plan. ERM will identify the issues that would send you in a different direction than your board and your community and your leadership want to send you to. And so it has a real cost to it. It's very tough to kill a college. I have been working in higher education forever, really serving since the late 70s in various roles in colleges and universities. And it's tough to close a college. So I don't want to be have that hyperbole associated with ERM. It's really what would prevent you from accomplishing your annual business plan, the capital campaign, your strategic plan. That's what we want to use ERM for. And what could, as it works within the organization, what could prevent you from accomplishing the issues that you need to make IT a robust and integrated part of the mission of the educational institution? So the first step, and it often comes from the board, it's pretty ironic. Back in the 90s, the Association of Governing Boards came to United Educators and said, you know, our trustees keep asking us about risk management. What do we do? What do we do? And so we put out a 12-page pamphlet on this is what trustees should do about risk management. Okay? In about 2007, right before the global financial crisis, they came to us, United Educators again, AGB did, and said, what do we do? The trustees are interested in risk management. What do we do? What do we do? So we did a survey. Went out and surveyed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trustees and decided that, you know, they really weren't paying that much attention, so we did sort of ERM light. These are the things you should be thinking about. These are some of the emerging risks, and it's a very nice pamphlet, about 30 pages. And then last year, they came to me and said, trustees are just all over this. They can't stop talking about risk management. We don't know how to guide them. What do we do? And so it is a big issue. The newspapers and others are just filled with these emerging issues. And this is the product of that. It just came out Wednesday. This is the only copy I have, and it will be unveiled at the AGB meeting in San Francisco next week. I think it's about 170 pages that I, with a lot of experts, Gary Langsdale included, wrote on what should trustees be thinking about in risk management. So we've gone from a 12-page pamphlet to a 170-pound book in a couple decades as trustees think about risk management. And ERM plays a major role in this, not because the trustees have a job in enterprise risk management, but they have a role in keeping the president and the chancellor accountable. So it is a process that the senior administration at a university owns, but has to have the support of the chancellor, of the trustees, of the leadership of the institution. I think the best way to describe this is the correct tone at the top, and it's a grassroots and grass tops movement. So the board has to be committed, the president has to see value in it, and it is often led by either the CFO or general counsel, the research that I did revealed. So either the president might convene a very senior panel to try to understand and identify the risks that are out there. One of the issues that we've talked to, a lot of the research has revealed is most of the researchers, even though we all think we are very unique, and my English teacher from high school would slap me for very unique, there are a lot of similarities for the institutions in this room and for the 3,000-4,000 institutions. So look at the risk, identifying the risks should be a relatively easy step. Take a risk register that's been out there already, identify the risks from your peers and networking, and then go about at step two of assessing those risks. What's the impact if this thing happens, and what's the probability that it will happen? Not every risk has a high impact and a high probability of happening at your campus. And it is a game, a process of prioritizing your energies. So you've seen heat maps, you've seen all sorts of complicated ways in order to identify where you should put your resources. If you think of a heat map or that grid process, I've even seen campuses put that on with risks on yellow stickies and just put them on high probability, high impact, and then start working on those and leave the low probability, low impact for your successors. So identify an assessment, identify the risks, assess the risks on which are the most likely to really cause harm at your institution, what's unique within your institution. And then where your real energy is in enterprise risk management is developing a plan. If this happens at our campus, how are we going to respond? And testing that plan and improving that plan. That's really the most important process in enterprise risk management, identifying the risk, assessing the risk, and developing a plan to respond to it. And the fourth and equally important process step is to continue to be on the lookout for emerging risks. The tragedy that happened in Boston this week, how does that affect my thinking of what I'm going to be doing on campus for spring fling? How does that change how I should be thinking about these issues? Whatever's emerging issues in the newspapers, it's very important to use those to identify emerging trends, assessing those, informing those, informing the process of that. We recommend out of the room identified no more than 10 go to the Board of Trustees, the Board of Regents. That's really all they should handle. We also think that the committees that handle the individual programs, whether it's student affairs, academic affairs, if you happen to have an IT committee of your board, those risks should go to the cognizant committees associated with that, not all being dumped in the audit committee. Oh, it's a risk, that's audit's issues, audit's concern, but really link program with the risks. As you work within the organization, we think it's very important to get directors, the operational people, the individuals in this room who both have a strategic vision of where things should be moving as well as how operationally they work. So as risks move throughout the organization, the list gets longer, but again, manageable within the scope of high priority, high impact for the institution. So ERM is a process. It is a discipline, a business process, a business discipline that allows you to make decisions on where you should be putting your resources and where you should be putting your energies in order to most effectively protect your institution. The trustees have a view, and I think it's an important emerging view. They are the fiduciaries. They are responsible for making sure that the institution that's been here for 50 years, 100 years, is there for another 150 in perpetuity. That's an interesting and a very challenging responsibility. And for decades, centuries, the trustees have been concerned about fiscal assets. They've been concerned about physical assets and making sure the campus structures are there. They've been concerned about human assets. And now on their screen, for really the first time, there are cyber assets. And I have been speaking throughout the country talking about the importance of cyber assets. And that's a huge umbrella, and we can talk about how we define that. But trustees are now waking up that cyber assets are as important as fiscal assets, as human assets, and as physical assets. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity for all of you to step up, describe the role and the integration of IT plans, IT risks, with the risks of the institution. When I started in higher education, IT was something that maybe did payroll. I spent probably the most interesting, except for my current job, working as the executive director of the Supercomputer Center at Cornell University. We were an IBM shop, one of the early NSF-funded supercomputer centers. And so at that point, it was really the transfer of IT and all of the support into the academic program. And now, of course, it's really the mission of the institution. And if the strategic plan isn't aligned with a mobile strategy, then ERM issues come to the forefront. So I'm going to stop there so that we can have a panel and drilling this ERM issue and ERM movement into your world so that you can be a more integrated role in ERM on your campuses. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice, for those insightful remarks about ERM and for getting us started this morning. Now I'd like to introduce the other two members of our panel. They are Kathy Hubbs, who is the Chief Information Security Officer at American University. Kathy. Gary Langsdale is the University Risk Officer at the Pennsylvania State University. Now the three of you have extensive experience with ERM. You've worked with this process at your institutions. So my first question is, what observations, what experiences, what lessons learned with ERM can you share with the audience? Kathy, would you like to start?
Sure. Can you hear me okay? Okay. Well, at American University, we're actually fairly on the beginning end of the process. We started and got sanctioned. It was, as Janice said, it was the trustees are the ones that said we should move on to developing an ERM process and system at American University. We had actually been and continue to be voluntary SOCs, so this was actually kind of a natural progression for us. So we actually fit the primer in that, right? We're moving along and it's sponsored from the top down. Our lessons learned, we're still in the beginning stages. The way it's run is by our associate VP of risk management. And then we have representation across all the divisions at the senior level across the institution. And they sorted through all of their risks and actually called together moderated sessions and brought a couple people levels down, so at the director level and even at the operational level. And we did the exercise Janice was saying. We actually were in a room moderated using stickies to kind of get ourselves narrowed down. So where we're at today, I don't know if I have lessons learned so much as we're working through it. We've identified about a large list, but have about 12 that are being brought to the board actually next month in May to be approved. But through 2012, some of those items are already owned by the divisions, and they've begun to work on those.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Gary?
Well, at Penn State, we've been working on enterprise risk management since about 2005. And as we got into it, it was a coalescence of the fact that there were trustees who happened to be in business and in their other interests. They had heard about ERM. One happened to be on the chair of an audit committee of a bank, and the financial institution got into ERM probably the first out of most industries. So he was very keen on this process. The CFO was also very interested, had been reading about it in trade magazines. Nakubo had published a white paper about enterprise risk management in higher ed. And the internal audit director and the risk senior risk management staff turned over at about the same time, at the end of 2003. And both the new audit director and the new risk manager were brought in with a mission to break down the silos and look differently at risks faced by the institution. And it was more about the process of thinking about risk than any particular drive that we're going to do enterprise risk management or whatever the flavor of the month was. It was, how can we get a better handle on risks faced by the institution? And so the audit director and I, the new audit director and I, went around and visited the top 50 leaders of the institution. Penn State has a wide array of campuses. We are one university geographically dispersed. And we went and visited all the chancellors, all of the college deans, all of the administrative unit leaders, and basically just asked a couple of questions to get people thinking about what is it that keeps them awake at night. We were not interested in, the audit director was not interested in how you're guarding your petty cash, and I was not interested particularly in who's going to slip on a banana peel. It was designed to be a more broad view of what are the risk issues, strategic risks, financial risks, operational risks, compliance risks. And as we asked those questions, it became very clear that the leaders we were asking about had not been asked about it before in that way and were grateful for the opportunity to talk about what was on their mind, about what was keeping them awake at night in a way that had never been asked before. We were told that these people are very busy people, i.e. they have short attention spans, and we should not expect to spend more than 20 minutes with each of them. We didn't have a single one of these 50, there were 53 interviews, we didn't have a single one that went less than an hour. One of the most senior leaders of the institution said, when we came in, she said, well, I've thought about this and I know why you're here to talk about risks. I've got a couple of things written down. This shouldn't take more than 15 minutes. Well, she took a breath after speaking for an hour and 15 minutes because she had a lot on her mind, and it just started a dialogue. And that visibility, that release of being able to talk about what all the risks were that they faced within their organization was liberating. And it led to an outpouring of interest in dealing with those risks. The worst risk is the one that you are unconsciously assuming. When you consciously assume risk, you've thought about it and you may be prepared to deal with it. It's the Donald Rumsfeld, there are things I don't know that I don't know that ought to keep you awake at night. And I think ERM is geared to try to begin to know those things that you don't know that you don't know.
Thanks, Gary. Janice, thank you.
Let me build on that. Gary mentioned that they started this process in 2005 at Penn State, which is on the early side of this. One thing that a lot of campuses, as I traveled around and did research for the book, said, those that started early went through that process of traveling around, gathering what keeps you up at night, and there are a lot of benefits to that. It opens the dialogue, it really makes connections, builds pathways. But at the same time, often that the weight of that process can bear down so heavily on the ERM initiative that it has died on many campuses. University of Missouri will speak to that. They started it, they interviewed, they came up with hundreds and hundreds of risks, and then just almost became paralyzed as to what the heck do we do with this now? Major research university in the South came up with 600 or 700 risks. And I have no doubt that that institution has 600 or 700 risks that ultimately they should get to. But by starting off with that, best practices now leads, let's start small, that are truly enterprise, that are truly focused at the board and the chancellor level, and then in subsequent years move down on that. That too many institutions become just, oh my goodness, I have 700 risks here, what the heck? And how do I sort this out, and how do I develop a priority? And so that is, Gary did it backwards, I think, that by starting small, starting at the very, stealing risks from other campuses, using that to jumpstart, and then work your way to where Gary is now, I think is probably a best practice and a lesson that many practitioners relayed to me. The other is make sure you look at sacred cows. and whatever they mean. Sacred cow could be, this is our mobile strategy, and we cannot differ from it. This is the only thing the faculty will ever accommodate for a mobile strategy. A sacred cow could be, this is the alumni tradition, or we couldn't possibly go into the cloud because of these issues. Whatever the sacred cow happens to be in your area, question it. There are too many examples of traditions, of people, of activities that we couldn't possibly look at that or change that in any way. And this ERM process is supposed to, in its best formation, to challenge those assumptions. What happens if that sacred cow doesn't work the way we think it should work, or there's something there? And it can manifest itself in any possible way. So those are the two lessons that those who have been at this for a while are learning, and we all get to benefit from.
Thank you, Janice. At the University of Maryland, Baltimore, we've been involved with enterprise risk management for about 3 years. And I'd just like to reiterate that it is a process. It's not a project. And in fact, it is initiated and led by senior leadership. And we look for risks that are strategic risks and meet strategic objectives. However, a lesson learned is that in the first cycle that we went through this, most of the risks were operational, what Janice was referring to. And we had to have senior leadership help us define those strategic risks going forward. The next question for the panel, since this is an IT audience, an audience of security professionals and IT leaders, what can you tell them about the difference between enterprise risk management and enterprise IT risk management, which focuses on IT only? Gary, what would you say about that?
I would say that enterprise IT presents its own risks, and that is an opportunity to use the enterprise risk management process to deal with a set of strategies, a set of goals, a set of objectives, a set of technologies, so that I see ERM as being a process that can be applied to enterprise IT, managing enterprise IT risks.
Thanks, Gary. Kathy?
Yeah, I would say this. Sorry, I can't hear myself. So I didn't think I was projecting. Yes, I think that that's right. I think we have both work hand in hand, right? So it's at a smaller scale. There are strategic aspects, of course, to enterprise IT risk management, but we need to continue to have that going on in our IT departments because that's potentially feeding up to the ERM, right? So they're not mutually exclusive. They're definitely tied to one another, but IT, as it says, is focused on the IT aspects. So we need to be utilizing frameworks like, I'll make a shout out for the HISC framework that's used there to be doing continuous risk assessments and figuring out what those important critical assets are that we need to be protecting and then feed that up through the ERM chain.
Thank you. Janice?
I think it's an opportunity to get a seat at the table. So, and it, you're absolutely right, it feeds up, but it is past the time where IT professionals should have a major prominent seat at the enterprise table of the college or university. And I think this is a pathway to get there. It's operational when you're looking within the IT organization, and it's strategic when you're looking how IT is an integral part of the mission of the institution. And it's past time for IT to have a very prominent seat at the table of where the institution is going. So I think this is a great bridge to that.
So ERM is really more holistic, isn't it?
Sure.
And at our institution, of all the risks, IT risks are approximately 5 to 10% of all the risks. So it really is a more holistic process, including all functions and areas of the university. So, Kathy, what would you recommend to the audience, the CIOs, the CISOs, the IT leaders, regarding their role with ERM? How do they get the IT risks into the ERM process? How do they get those priority risks that keep them up at night on the radar of the ERM executive committee?
So since I have security people, an incident doesn't help. Doesn't hurt, but no. Not really.
Waste a good crisis.
Not really. Yeah. Well, first of all, right, like anything, it's building relationships. So number one, hopefully if you don't have relationship with your risk officer or risk manager, or if there isn't a risk person that's identified at your campus, trying to feel out who are those individuals at the university that are embodying risk and make that partnership, right? So I'm not, we all have different cultures and different institutions and different sizes, but I think partnering and building that alliance so that you have that common conversation around the risks and starting to, I think kind of it was like Gary's thing, is trying to understand where the pain points of IT, because we're all depending on technology in our different units, are, and then being able to have that dialogue and escalating it. Maybe I can give an example is, I think a lot of you are taking credit cards on your campus, right? And I think that that's tied to the strategic goal in that at American University, for example, right, we have tuition payment. And so we want to make sure that we continue to have students, and PCI compliance is part of that. So that's one of those pain points, that making sure that the fiscal representatives understand that technology is depended on for processing the credit cards, but the institution doesn't want to have reputational or financial risks associated with taking those credit cards. So trying to find a common pain point and having that conversation, have a story around that, and hopefully being able to demonstrate how there could be some sort of a loss to the institution and carrying that forward.
Great, thank you. Okay. Gary, what would you recommend?
I agree. It's a matter of the IT professionals should be talking with other leaders within the university, whether it's a formally appointed risk manager or the chief business officer or general counsel or whoever it might be who is charged with thinking about risks, who is charged with bringing together the risk issues to the senior leadership, whether it's the president's council or to the trustees, the regents, and just trying to peck away at, here are the things that are going to affect this institution. Janice mentioned from the podium that nobody wants to have their name in the news. Nobody wants to have their reputation. Nobody wants to be distracted from their mission. And I think the way that IT leaders can address this is by framing it in terms of, this isn't just an IT problem that our firewall went down. This is an issue in how it will affect the institution, its reputation, and its ability to fulfill its mission.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
My research revealed as in writing the book, that there are really four primary areas that IT relates to and is integral to ERM on campus. And the first is really from a pure strategy. And does the IT strategy, is it aligned with the strategy of the institution? Sounds simple, but is the mobile strategy that you are developing, that you are responsible for, support and in lockstep with the mobile strategy that the faculty are developing at this point? Are you going to be equipped, and are you part of the discussions and the movement forward as they think about delivering the product, whether it's the research, the teaching, the learning, on a mobile platform? So is that strategy linked? I would also put analytics on that. Are you part of the discussion that is thinking about how you're going to use data both for incoming students, for retention of students, for alumni? Are you part of that thinking, whether or not it's big data or however you want to phrase that thinking? Are you part of that discussion as a chief information officer in how you're going to be developing that strategy? That's an ERM risk. If you are not part of that on how the alumni office, the recruitment, student admissions, financial aid, student health are thinking about using the data, privacy, and how your values and how your culture of your campus are in line with both state and federal laws, and are you prepared to both protect the privacy and be compliant with whatever laws, and compliance is a big part of IT. Now, the third area is security. We spend an enormous amount of time after the breach. If I could only get IT professionals to spend that time before the breach instead of afterwards. So it is a risk. How is the institution, and it's very aligned with taking credit cards, the security issues that, whether or not it's grades or academic records, alumni records. How are you thinking about security as an integral part of the RISC and the ERM program of the campus? And finally, I think a very underlooked risk at within the IT and the whole ERM framework is training. I think it is the most underused resource. So many times I hear IT professionals say, if they would just use what we give them, we would be in so much better shape. And so either overtraining or undertraining or inappropriately training. And I know that there is incredible training fatigue out there, and it's very difficult to reach the users. But I think it's a huge risk to pay a significant amount of money and put in a system and not have it used optimally or to its fullest extent. And so I think a big risk, an enterprise risk for most colleges and universities is training, and training in IT systems and helping individuals understand that it's behavior change. And that normally doesn't come up on people's screens, but when I talk to IT professionals, when I have done my research for the book, it really has come up on there's this vacuum here, and we've got the systems if they would only use them. But it's all about behavior change, and training is often neglected, therefore it doesn't get resources and it doesn't get people's attention, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I would add a big IT risk is training. And it's often not mentioned with the other strategy, privacy, and security, which are also important.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's very important that IT is infused in the ERM structure. At the University of Maryland, Baltimore, we have a structure such that there's a president, then there's an executive committee, there's a steering committee, and then there's subject area work groups. And at each committee and work group level, we have IT representation. And that's very important during this process of investigating what your risks are and how to mitigate those risks. So Gary and Kathy, what if a campus doesn't have a risk officer or an ERM process? What should a CIO or an IT leader or a CISO do about enterprise risks that affect IT if you don't have an ERM underway?
I would go back to it's up to the IT leadership to make themselves heard in an effective way, but to frame it not as this is an IT issue and oh my gosh, but...
And here, I need more money.
And I need more money. It is more about how will this process or this risk or this issue affect the institution overall. I think, you know, we talk about, Janice mentioned the downside and the upside of risk. Every risk presents an opportunity, a reward. That's why you take the risk, is for the potential reward. I think it's a matter of framing. Here's what will happen if we don't do X. Here is what will happen if we do. And here is how that will affect our mission, whether it's adequate security if you're going to offer a MOOC, or it's, you know, having the right firewalls and spending the money and getting people trained to administer the systems. Whatever it is, it's a matter of getting the rest of the institution's leaders to understand, whether it's, call it ERM, call it grape jelly if you want to. The issue is, how do you get everybody to understand what the issue is, and that this does affect the institution's mission.
Building on that, if your campus is thinking of participating in a MOOC or offering online courses, how does the American for Disabilities Act relate to that? Are we thinking about that? What additional work do we need to do to make it ADA compliant? And how are we going to cross state lines and be accommodating and get the appropriate licenses? What kind of outside experts do we need to bring in to get through this? So that's a strategy. We want to participate in this for the academic mission. All right, there are IT implications to this. How can we be part of this discussion and bring in experts? Yes, there's an upside, as Gary mentioned, but we need to make sure that we don't have an American for Disabilities Act lawsuit because hearing impaired students can't participate in this class, for instance. So I think those issues are a way to get to the table, add value, and be part of the process and the discussion and not just looking through a narrow prism.
Kathy, your perspective?
Yeah, I would echo what all of you are saying. If there isn't an identified risk management officer, then you have to find your way to the leadership or potentially partner, you know, in IT security, we often partner with the Office of General Counsel or maybe of internal audit. So there's also could be this way of, before you bring it up, is again, I'm building these alliances and these partnerships with other areas in the institution that have been faced with risk issues also. So there's already kind of a brotherhood or a sisterhood around recognizing that there's risk issues. And so though maybe somebody at your institute doesn't have that title, there's this recognition. So I think you can bind it to the type of problems and issues that Janice and Gary were saying. But I think getting that, people talking about it and recognizing that there needs to be attention to the risk is by making sure that you're partnering with other people on the campus as well.
Right, right. And one of those things that resonates with presidents and senior leadership is information security. So if you don't have an ERM process, if you have a good information security program and plan, and you identify those risks within that plan and submit that to senior leadership, they tend to look at that very closely. So Janice, you mentioned that you have a new book regarding ERM, and you've mentioned quite a bit about the topics and good information about ERM for the audience, but what else can you tell them about key initiatives or key issues that might be in the book that would be helpful to them?
Well, as I mentioned, the boards are really getting engaged in this, and I think it's up to us who serve education to help them know their role in that. I used to work at Cornell, as I mentioned, and Frank Rhodes, President Emeritus, had a wonderful phrase that was not his, but he used frequently, and that is having the boards have a noses in and fingers out at manner about dealing with issues on the campus. And I think it's a great opportunity to help them, A, understand the differences between running a campus IT operation and running a business IT operation. Too many times I see trustees coming in, and many of our board members are IT professionals, maybe because they're brilliant, maybe because they're wealthy, maybe because they're wanting to get engaged with their campuses, or all of those reasons, and they really think that running your shop is the same as the way they run their shop. And it's incredibly different, so it's up to us, it's up to you to explain the differences, how the mission is different, the privacy issues are different, but nevertheless, the risks are very real, that who are the three most vulnerable, according to recent research, entities for hacking and for breaking into? Retail, government, and would it be universities? I think they're pretty high up there. And so you are a very vulnerable population. So helping the board understand, they are coming with a mindset. And yet you, by virtue of your mission, keep a very open platform. So helping them understand, staying current in issues, I think is really important. It was funny, I was coming down on the elevator this morning, and I was tweeting that I'm speaking to IT professionals at Educause or whatever, and the people in the elevator are looking at me. I think you're in the audience here, thinking, are you kidding, lady? Why would you, what are you going to say? But you can follow me on Twitter, and I will, at J. Mink Abraham, and I'll continue to talk about these issues and give you resources as I come up with them on IT issues. I'll try to send some specific links on that as I learn about these issues and share them as I'm traveling around on the book.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. What you mentioned before, too, which I think is very, very important, it's a process of allocating resources better. And I think that's a really important point. Gary, what about IT decisions or risks associated with purchasing and implementing systems that include options for community source, cloud sourced, or commercial products and services? How do you get these pending decisions and risks included in the ERM process?
Well, it's the same thing, and I want to include those issues in the ERM process. I'm not sure that our CIO does, because he he is fond of telling me that that train has already left the station. Every time somebody in our organization clicks, I agree, we've entered into a contract. And the terms of that contract, have you ever looked at the terms, actually printed out and read the terms of those agreements? So within Penn State, by an accident of history, the risk management department is responsible for contracts. And so we actually do print out and read some of those agreements and talk about what the issues are. Now, it depends on what the product is. I don't have too much heartburn with, you know, updating your Adobe file or iTunes, but there are other products and services.
At least they're paying on iTunes.
Yeah, well.
As opposed to the alternative.
but I have significant heartburn about the cloud, because not only because the provider's terms are so onerous, but I also have somebody whispering in my ear about ITAR and export control. So where is the cloud that this stuff is being stored in? Where is that cloud hovering over? That presents significant problems to me. But I acknowledge that probably, well, a significant percentage of our faculty have already clicked on Google Docs and said, I agree, and they're using it whether we like it or not. But more formal agreements to use that kind of product, service, software as a service, whatever you want to call it, needs to be thought through in a conscious way instead of an unconsciously assuming the risk. And I think that, you know, there, I will grant to our CIO that we are going to wind up there. But I'm not the person who is going to stand in front of that train which has left the station. But I am going to try to get to a point where we at least acknowledge and perhaps negotiate what we can to lessen the risk. Not minimize, because we're not going to be able to minimize it, but to understand what the risks are and to try and keep it between the rails.
Thank you. Kathy, you're an information security officer, so what's your perspective on this?
So I was listening to Gary and feeling kind of some pain, but at the same time I was thinking, you know, framing it in this ERM discussion, that cloud is absolutely one of those opportunity conversations, because I don't see how you can stand in the way of it. It's already happening. We've outsourced many of our services at American University. Unfortunately, our CIO is interested in it, and as is the board, and I think there's a lot of examples to be able to talk about the inherent risks and making sure that the people that are in contracting and the people that are in purchasing and training and awareness across campus to understand what type of data is out there and all the different responsibilities, legislate compliance and regulation that exist. And the more of us that are putting more formal processes around that, not saying you can't go out into the cloud because they're already doing it, but engaging in the dialogue around what are the potential risks, and then those big, giant companies out there will have to listen to higher ed when we push them on their terms of agreement and we talk to them about contracts and start to be more open and transparent, right? Sometimes we're up against the wall. There's one company that's the only company we can go to, and they're not really willing to hedge, and so we kind of just have to sign, right? I think the more that we have these open dialogues about the risks but the opportunities that are out there with those companies, the more we're going to be able to have information available. And our team is involved in reviewing the contracts. We give a risk rating, right? And we try to raise level of awareness to the individuals, the business stakeholders that are going forward with that purchase and that service, and try to help them understand there's some risks or there's not. Here's what we're suggesting. Here's the probability, and trying to engage them in that way. So I think it's an opportunity, and it's already there, right? The train has left the station.
That's a great ERM in practice. It really is. That here's a strategy for the institution. We're moving forward. We've thought about the risk, the opportunities. We're going to engage all of our facilities in order to do that. Training, thinking about the different perspectives. That's a perfect example of how ERM can contribute to looking at a mission-driven initiative, of which cloud computing is.
So, Janice, I'd like to give you the last question before we open it up to the audience for their questions. How does ERM differ between large and small institutions, public and private institutions, and higher education in the corporate world?
That's a great question. The biggest difference, public-private, is everything's open in a public system. And you can go on the University of Texas, the University of Washington, and their risks are out there for the world to see. And they have acknowledged that, in fact, have said, we know what they are, and we're willing to share them. We have to share them. And so that's the biggest difference. But I think they really took that leap in saying, why hide? Everyone knows that there are risks here, and so we might as well get them out there. The private universities have been very reluctant to share. And in the book, I just private research university, private comprehensive university, they demanded anonymity as I posted these losses. So I think it's the openness is the greatest issue. But smaller campuses are slower to get on to the ERM framework for all of the reasons we talked about. They don't have an internal audit. They don't have a chief risk officer. It's the CFO. I used to be one. Often they don't have in-house counsel. So they really are much more the master of all trades. And the IT shop is very much in that same avenue. But they are doing it. Grinnell University, Ithaca College, small to mid-sized institutions are saying, because the board is pressuring them, we can do this. We can begin thinking about these risks and getting a process going. So I am seeing small, mid, and very large complex systems thinking about this because principally the board is driving it. And so I think it's important to shape the discussion, to again remind the board that you are not a business in the way that they are a business. I think they have to be continually reminded of that, that everything isn't measurable, that we don't have widgets at the end. We have alumni. We have research that may or may not ever make any money for this institution. And so I think that continual reminding the board of that, but still staying accountable, it's a challenge. It's really hard, but I think that's what ERM can help you think about that as you link strategy, link initiatives. NYU does a great job of whatever new project they have, and everyone knows that New York University has, they are incredibly entrepreneurial. Whenever they bring a new project to the board, Mike Leibowitz, their chief risk officer, he has an ERM analysis there, upside, downside risk, assessment, everything else. The board is conditioned now to thinking about, new project. Risks, opportunities, what's the score, how do you mitigate it, what's my appetite, how do I work through that? So that board, either they train the administration, which could be with President Sexton, or President Sexton trained them, but that's a great example of integrating ERM into the everyday process. So it's not an idea du jour. I mean, this industry is ripe with TQM and been around long enough that, you know, every year there's a new initial. But this is really getting it integrated into the way you do business, the way you put together a budget, a strategic plan, a new initiative, cloud computing. Let's think about risks. Let's quantify them as much as we can. Let's get a sense of what our appetite is, and then a risk tolerance, and then go forward.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd like to open it up for questions of the panel. Does anybody have a question? Please stand up to the mic. Please, we have a web audience, so please speak nice and loud and clearly.
Just wondering, my name is Carlos Lovato with New Mexico State University. Just wondering if the CIOs of those universities that have already implemented ERM, if they are reporting directly to the presidents. If you, Janice, if you noticed something as part of your research.
Yeah, that's a great question. Most universities that have ERM and have been working on it have a very senior level, almost president's cabinet. Cornell University is a great example. They have, it's a fairly large group. It's about 20 or so individuals, and definitely the CIO sits at that table. So it's led in Cornell's case by the general counsel. And so my research indicates that the ERM panel is either led by the general counsel or the CFO. Operationally, it might be one level down as well, but the CIO is at that ERM planning group, an integral part of the process. So I didn't find any case of a senior level ERM initiative that has been going on for a year or more where the CIO was not at the table.
Should we weigh in and say that's consistent at AU? Yeah.
Okay. That's the same for me. I serve on the executive committee of the ERM.
I can't imagine how you could have an ERM project process at a campus and not have the CIO. I can't imagine. I began my talk saying assets, and I use that cyber assets, which is sort of cute, but it's really the entire information technology strategy is an integral asset, an integral part of the plan. So I just can't imagine how it wouldn't exist.
Another question?
In my extraordinarily limited experience, walking through these processes, the difficult part isn't getting people to the table and putting the stickies on the wall. It's institutionally defining what it means to be a significant resource, a high probability event, or a significant impact. Do you have any tips for institutionally defining these things across the entire organization?
It's all relative. I don't think there is a magic formula or a number to come up with what is a significant risk. In my experience, it is a matter of judgment. Most people use a classic heat map to try and just place things in a relative sense. There are different appetites for risk. Some can quantify it, others are more experiential with it. But in my experience, it works best when it's relative and everybody understands the relativity of. So for example, we happen to be a school that has a nuclear reactor on campus. So the risk of an incident with that reactor, the probability is extremely low, based on the kind of reactor and all the safeguards that are in place, extremely low. But if something were to go wrong, the severity of that risk, not only financially, in fact, financially would be the least of the problems, but we consider that to be a significant risk, even though it has a very, very low probability of occurring. So it's relative, and there are a number of risks which are not quite as severe, but more likely that we spend more time on than, you know, certainly the NRC and the radiation safety people and those who are responsible for the reactor spend a lot of time worrying and focusing on it. But from an enterprise-wide basis, we're going to let them worry about that one, and we'll focus more attention of the institution on other risks that have a higher probability, but a high severity also.
Yeah, I would agree. And getting hung up on the first and second steps is a trap. Identifying risk and assessing those risks. Putting energy, there's not a perfect, these are the risks we have to focus on. If this is a process and you take it, it's going to be a process, the frequency and severity, using insurance terms, are where you should be putting your energy. Gary outlined a severe but infrequent. So, frankly, I would do exactly what Gary's doing on that. Yes, there are compliance issues, focus on it, but putting too much energy into assessing the perfect 10 that you have to work on now is really a fool's errand. So getting to the plans and keeping that process moving and creating the culture is far more valuable than getting the absolute perfect risk score. Consultants will come in and spend an extraordinary amount of money helping you develop the perfect risk score. Save your money, work on the plan, and keep the process moving so that you can identify the next unknown.
I think that's an important point. The ERM process is even more important than the product. So starting the process at your institution is really very important. Rodney? Rodney, I think we need to turn your mic on. You might have to repeat that.
And the second question is about the role of cyber liability insurance. I'm not going to repeat the whole first question. You can respond to it. Cyber insurance.
Cyber insurance was the second one, but the first part was more about responding to how to prepare instead of being reactive to an incident, correct? How to be proactive. Well, first of all, I think you know what your weaknesses are, so if you have a good, get a strong information security program in place. But what we've done at American University is we haven't had, where is some wood, any serious incident that's been well known, but how we got it discussed so that we had focus on being able to shore up and get more strength and fortify and prevent was to use other people's breaches as examples. Sorry, but thank you. And and then more effectively speaking up at the higher level for the ERM and our board members and our CFO in particular is we've used Ponemon. It does a U.S. Breach report that actually contains higher education as part of that value. And over the years, they've determined it's about $214 per record to recover from an incident. And then I think they said on average about $7.4 million. That's a lot. That got our CFO, that got our board going, what do we need to focus on? And so then you come back to the IT risk assessments that presumably we're doing, and we know where some of our weaknesses are, and we say, this is why we need funding and to have support to continue to work on these efforts, because otherwise this could be us, and this is how much it would cost. So I think that that's the best. And look, hey, nothing's 100%, but that's a way to do it, and that's worked for us to get the right attention.
Why don't you talk about your cyber liability insurance? You have a unique program there that I think is really worth sharing.
I consider cyber insurance to be a tool, not a solution. It is a bank just like any other kind of insurance, but that doesn't solve the problem. It's there to respond if you have a breach which happens to be covered. We created our own cyber insurance policy. Rather than, cyber insurance is like trying to get a loan at a bank. The only way you can get one is if you don't need one, because of the very extensive process of vetting what your vulnerabilities might be. And higher ed institutions have a track record of having difficulty purchasing cyber insurance for a reasonable amount of money with a reasonable amount of protection. So what we did was we put together our own insurance policy using what was out there and did it more as an effort in behavior modification, where what was not important was we put a $1 million policy limit out there, where before there was no money available. There was no fund available to pay for breaches. So what we did was we created a $1 million fund that would be available for breaches. And we told people that if they followed reasonably good practices that were recommended by our CISO, if a unit followed those practices, reasonably good, not best, not great, but reasonably good, do you have a firewall and is it installed? we had a breach with a firewall in which the unit had said, yes, we have a firewall. It's sitting in the desk drawer waiting to be installed. And we had a breach. But yes, they had a firewall. But
My point is that if you follow reasonably good practices and you have a breach anyway, then the unit will have a very low deductible. But if you were not following reasonable practices and you have a breach, you will have a $100,000 deductible. And talk about behavior modification. Nobody wants to go to their dean to say, I just cost you an extra $75,000 because we didn't have our firewall up to date. So it has done wonders, I think, for the, in combination with another number of other proactive processes that the Information Security Office instituted at about the same time to significantly reduce the number of breaches that we've had. But people paid attention when we offered them this choice. So that's how we've used cyber insurance.
Thanks, Gary.
That's brilliant. It really is. And putting that in your campus, it's really just a brilliant solution.
You can hear more from Gary at 9:45 when he has his presentation. It's titled How to Think Like a Risk Manager, so he can talk more about that at that time. We have one more minute for one final question.
Thank you. In the absence of risk, someone who is responsible for risk on campus, who do you think would be the right person or group that can rise to this?
I would say
what do you think what their background would be?
Let me answer that in two ways. The way that it is most frequently done is out of the business office or the finance office, because they're thinking about financial risks and insurance. So there is a natural linkage there to take the next step. Do they have the tools and the skills available? Most of them. But this could arise from any place within the institution where there's an interest and a resource there. It doesn't have to be the finance organization.
So we're out of time. Let's thank our panel.